ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
How did life begin? And what happens when a popular YouTube personality picks a fight over science with an expert in synthetic chemistry? Well, for the rest of us, something wonderful happens, namely a detailed, deep dive, 13-part video series on one of the hottest topics in science today. Hello, I'm Eric Anderson, and today I'm pleased to have Dr. Brian Miller back on our show, this time to discuss the detailed course on abiogenesis by Dr. James Tuer, distinguished synthetic organic chemist at Rice University. Dr. Miller is research coordinator at the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute in Seattle, Washington. He holds a bachelor's degree in physics with a minor in engineering from MIT and a PhD in physics from Duke University. Dr. Miller has spoken internationally on the topics of intelligent design and the origin of life. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about this video series and why you became interested.
Well, I first became interested in the origin of life because my PhD was in complex systems, and I got it through the Center of Non-Equilibrium Dynamics and Complex Systems at Duke University. And when I started to hear about origin of life theories, I noticed that they were appealing to language and concepts from my own field. They were sort of invading physics. And I realized that they were doing it in ways that seemed very problematic. So that's what got me interested in this field. And then when I encountered James Tuer and met him, I've been incredibly impressed with how he's gone into the details and showed why the intuition from physics that systems always move away from life and not towards it is confirmed in the nitty-gritty details of these origin of life experiments and in the research that he's done. So that's what really got me interested.
Right. Now, have you always been skeptical about a naturalistic origin of life, or was there a time when you thought that might be true?
Well, what happened when I went to my undergraduate, which was MIT, is I believed in a creator, but then I read books like Richard Dawkins' The Blind Watchmaker and was exposed to more of these ideas that a cell formed just through random processes. And I became pretty convinced for a while that there was sort of this dichotomy between people of science who were not terribly religious, that just realized that everything was the product of chance and time, and then people that may have been people of faith that just sort of believe things in a very superficial way. And that kind of really inspired me to dig deeply in the science. And what I found is the more I studied the science, the more I recognized that undirected natural processes cannot explain either the origin of life or its dramatic changes through time, and that you do see extraordinary evidence of design throughout nature. And that's really, it was that quest that really put me where I am today.
Yeah, that's a wonderful experience. And it really, I think, highlights the fact that as you delve more deeply into science, rather than leading you away from design or leading you away from thinking that there's maybe purpose and plan, it actually led you toward that.
That's absolutely correct.
So I know you've had an opportunity to be interviewed on Dr. Tuer's show as well, which is great. And I certainly encourage listeners to check out that video. But let's jump into this video series that Dr. Tuer put together on the origin of life. Who is Professor Dave and what was his video about?
Professor Dave is sort of a YouTube personality, and he's put out a lot of very nice videos that help to popularize scientific concepts. And his actual name is Dave Farina. And he has a bachelor's in chemistry and a master's in science education. So he's been trained on how to present scientific ideas to the public. And what's interesting, though, is he listened to James Tuer's critique of the origin of life and decided to do a video that critiqued James Tuer's critique. And Dave Farina basically said that everything James Tuer said was wrong. And that's how his claims about the origin of life came into my orbit.
Yeah, and I think Farina also questioned Tuer's motives and whether he was acting in an appropriate way. We won't get into that stuff. We'll just let that roll off, you know, Dr. Tuer's back, as he said himself, you know, not worry about that. We're going to focus on the science. But then Dr. Tuer came along and said, hey, there's a lot of misrepresentations and errors in this video that Dave Farina put out. Is that what's going on?
Yeah. And the reason Dr. Tuer decided to respond is a few reasons. One is that Professor Dave has a very large following. I think it's like 1 million viewers for his videos. And also the mistakes that Professor Dave Farina made are common mistakes, common misperceptions that people have about the state of the origin of life research. So Dr. Tuer wanted basically to bring clarity and understanding of where the research really is. That was his motivation.
Yeah. And from my perception. I would say there were dozens and dozens of mistakes and misrepresentations in Farina's video, but maybe you could just list a couple of the key misconceptions that he had about the origin of life that jumped out at you.
Well, the basic misconceptions are that everything is easy, and that that researchers have shown that this could have happened in a laboratory. So what could have happened in the early Earth, researchers duplicated in the lab and then were able to show that it moves forward towards life. That was the overarching misconception. And more specifically, he had misconceptions about the origin of the building blocks. He had misconceptions about how hard it would be to link the building blocks together into larger molecules. And he misunderstood the difficulty of bringing everything together in a functional cell. And also, he misunderstood what natural selection could potentially accomplish, and he didn't understand what self-organization could and could not do. That's sort of an overview of the errors.
Well, that's a pretty big list of key issues. But there's a couple of things here that I want to tease out for our listeners, because there's a difference between saying X could arise on the early Earth, and we've shown that X can arise in the lab. A lot of people might have this perception that researchers can create all these kinds of things in the lab, but yeah, it's tough on the early Earth, and that would be a problem. But I think Tuer really spoke even to the first point about the challenges of creating building blocks in the lab. Talk to us a little bit about how he responded to Farina's claim that the building blocks of life could have easily originated.
Yes. So what Dr. Tuer did is he looked at all the primary literature, and what he found is that even in a laboratory, even with the most sophisticated techniques, we cannot create a lot of what's necessary for life. It's extremely difficult. But what we can do, even the small things we can do, require enormous investigator interference. So for instance, if you want to create a nucleotide, it's an incredibly elaborate process. What you have to do is go through multiple steps, and in each step, you have to change the conditions, you've got to change the reactants, and you have to do it with what he describes as exquisite precision. We're talking at times about maybe 100 steps to get what you really need, these complex molecules for life. So it has no bearing on what could have happened on the early Earth, because to try to imagine a natural process that could do that, you have to imagine dozens of environments that are interconnected that perfectly shape each stage and then pass it on to the next stage at the right time. And in these experiments, they use molecules to help the process that would not even have been available on the early Earth. So there's absolutely no relationship between what happens in a lab to create these molecules and what could have happened in the ancient Earth.
Yeah, and the conditions, I think it's really insightful just for anybody, whether or not you have a background in chemistry, I think it's really insightful just to listen to some of these protocols that exist. I mean, it's things like wash the solution with so many milliliters of water at this temperature with this pH for 30 seconds and then quickly change the pH or quickly change the temperature. And, you know, you have to purify these things. You have to have the reactions just in the right time and in the right way. And then you still have other problems. Maybe you'll talk about it later, but you still don't even in that case get all the exact building blocks that you want.
Oh, yeah. And one of the big challenges is a lot of the conditions they use in the lab couldn't even happen on the early Earth, like using a vacuum pump to.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Vacuum pump.
Not going to happen like in a thermal vent or in a cave.
Yeah.
And another big challenge is that they have to use what's called relay synthesis. And this is one of the most profound insights that Dr. Tuer had, is that if you were really trying to do an origin of life experiment to mimic the early Earth, what you do is you'd start with something that could realistically have been on the early Earth. And then, yeah, you might change conditions. You might add a few things here and there. But you would just let that experiment naturally move forward. That's not what they do. What they do is they will create a certain set of conditions and produce what they want. But that will be in very small concentrations mixed in with lots of other molecules. And that's always what happens, because that's what just organic chemistry does. So basically, it's the end of the story, because what typically will happen is even the molecule you want will start to vanish from solution. It'll interact with other molecules that are there, or it'll decompose.
Yeah.
So what they have to do is they have to stop the experiment. They have to recognize that they got the little blip of something they want, but then they buy that from a chemical store in very high concentrations and high purity. And then they take that new material in such high purity and concentrations, and they restart the experiment with completely different conditions. And then they'll find something they want, mix it in with lots of other stuff, and they'll stop it and then redo that process over and over again. That's called relay synthesis. And it's completely unrealistic with what could have happened on the early Earth.
Yeah. And so by doing all of this, though, where they have the ability to change the conditions, the pH, the temperature, the types of chemicals, blocking reactions, preventing interfering cross reactions, doing relay synthesis, have researchers been able to produce some of the key molecules that are required for life?
Yeah, well, they haven't even been able to like create a long RNA strand doing this. So they haven't even been able to create some of the very complex sugars. So even with all this prowess, they are unable to create what they really want to create. What they do is they'll get chemicals from laboratories or from chemical supply companies, but they get it from life. What they'll do is they'll get, let's say, highly pure and concentrated amino acids because they take bacteria that produce them. So again, we can't even do with all of our expertise what's needed to get some of these molecules. We get them from life, and then that's what they start with in these experiments.
Yeah, that's really remarkable that we're still going back, at least in a lot of cases, to the bacteria to help us get some of the molecules that we need. So this idea then that it's easy to get the building blocks of life on the early Earth fails because it's not easy, period. I mean, even in the best of circumstances with the best equipment and the best lab researchers and the most intelligent effort, it's not easy. And I think that was a thing that Dr. Tour really brought home, is that it's not easy, period. Then you translate that to now go to an undirected, chaotic, barren, abiotic environment and try it under a rock, as he said.
Yeah. And this is really a key point, is that if you were going to just ask the question, what would we expect to see on the early Earth? And you said, what with realistic materials, with realistic processes, you might get a few amino acids in more than trace quantities, but that's about it. That's all you're going to get. And even those trace quantities of a couple amino acids and maybe a fatty acid here would be mixed in with so many other chemicals that ends the story. That's what could have occurred on the early Earth without help. That's reality. So chemists have to create incredibly artificial conditions to get something that is necessary for life, even though that could never have possibly happened in any realistic circumstance.
Yeah, but Brian, aren't you forgetting that there's lots of time? I mean, doesn't having a lot of time help to make sure that we have this opportunity for all these different reactions to take place?
Oh, and that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions, because time is not the friend of biology, it's the adversary. If you look at the essential materials of life, like RNA, DNA, proteins, they degrade. Mm-hmm. So what will happen is RNA will degrade quickly in an ocean compared to geological timeframes. DNA will eventually degrade. Proteins will eventually break apart. So what happens is that if you imagine some miraculous circumstances where just incredibly you have, let's say, a liter of water with a few proteins and a few RNAs, what's going to happen is before they even make contact with each other, they're probably going to break apart and be useless for life. So time forces you to keep resetting the experiment over and over again. So if you don't see a cell within just a blip of time, you have to completely start from scratch.
Start over, yeah. And I think this is just a really fundamental point that so many people miss that Dr. Tour has done a great job of bringing out. And I like the way you say that. I think one of the lectures I went and listened to, he said, time is not the savior, it's the enemy.
Yeah.
And it's really a fundamental point for organic chemistry. So let's assume, Brian, through some crazy miracle that we got all the building blocks that we wanted. What about the later stages in the origin of life? What did Dr. Tour say about that?
Yeah, and the challenge is, let's imagine that just you miraculously have this pool of water and you have a high concentration of highly pure left-handed amino acids or right-handed sugars, nucleotides. Let's just imagine that happened. We'll forget about the difficulty of that. You still are not going to be able to put them together in the right way because these molecules can combine in multiple different ways. The way they do this in a lab to create proteins or to create RNA or DNA is they actually use a very sophisticated set of protocols. So what you'll have is, let's say you'll introduce one type of amino acid, you'll introduce a second type that you want it to link to, and then you'll put special chemicals that act as blockers. So it'll prevent the side chains or exposed atoms from interacting that you don't want to interact. And then what you'll do is you'll put in another chemical that forces the connection that you want to link the amino acids together in a peptide bond or to link nucleotides together. And then you have to put in another chemical to remove the blockers. And then you have to repeat the process with the next amino acid. So this is an incredibly complicated and sophisticated process just to link them together properly, because if you don't do that, what happens is you'll get the molecules linking in the wrong way, and then they will not be useful for life.
Yeah, that's a very great point. And, you know, just for our listeners, maybe bringing it up to the macro level, because sometimes it's easier to visualize. It's one thing to have all the materials. Let's say somebody's building a house for you and they just roll up in a truck and dump everything on the lawn. You still have to put those together in exactly the right way and in the right order. It's not sufficient to just have the building blocks and then you say, oh, okay, they're going to self-assemble somehow. And the same thing happens in chemistry, except it's even more difficult because they tend to not only not assemble in the right way, they tend to assemble in the wrong way and stick to the wrong things. And so it's a very tricky point. I think this issue that you mentioned about putting on blockers to prevent them from joining where they shouldn't, and then you have to remove the blockers through another chemical bath and do a purifying reaction there. This is just a really big issue.
Yeah, and again, as we've already talked about, you're still not out of the water, because even if you get these incredible molecules to form, they will break apart relatively quickly. So by the time this protein or this RNA found itself inside of a cell membrane, which was a staging ground for life, it will most likely have broken apart. And again, you would just have to start again from scratch.
Well, this is really great, Brian. I appreciate you being here to help us understand a little bit more about the details that Dr. Tuer laid out in his video. If possible, I'd love to have you back to continue our discussion.
I would love to be back.
Does new evidence of cosmic design fascinate you? If so, check out the new book from philosopher of science and best-selling author Stephen Meyer, Return of the God Hypothesis, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe. The science is airtight, and at the same time, it's written so that non-scientists can follow the argument and see the many amazing ways modern physics and cosmology point to a grand designer of life and the universe. Check out the glowing endorsements from Nobel laureate Brian Josephson and others at returnofthegodhypothesis.com. That's returnofthegodhypothesis.com. That site also gives you links to Amazon and other booksellers that are selling the book. Pick up your copy today at returnofthegodhypothesis.com.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of ID the Future. To learn more about the origin of life and the evidence for design and purpose in nature, check out other episodes of ID the Future, as well as our YouTube channel, Discovery Science. If you find these discussions to be a valuable contribution to the public conversation about origins, consider sharing a link with a friend. For ID the Future, I'm Eric Anderson. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.